The Holy Gospel for this day of resurrection is recorded in Mark, the 16th chapter. And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. Very early on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb when the sun had risen, and they were saying to one another, "Who will roll the stone for us away from the door of the tomb?" And looking up, they saw that the stone was rolled back. It was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe, and they were amazed. And he said to them, "Do not be amazed. You seek Jesus who was crucified? He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he's going before you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. Two words kept hitting me from this Gospel reading of Mark. Interestingly, the Gospel of Mark of the four has no appearances of the risen Jesus. It ends like this: terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The end. Interesting, huh? The two words, terror, traumas is the Greek word, a trauma, horrified experiences, overwhelming shock, right? That kind of thing. Terror. And ecstasis, interesting, that's the word for amazement. It actually, the word ecstasy, right? Literally being outside of yourself in wonder, surprise, shock, amazement. So when have you felt that? Both terror and ecstasy all at the same time. Have you ever had that? Well, you probably have. Emily and I were talking about this week, our experiences of that. And I remember the first time that my dad, who was a flight instructor, and he was teaching me to fly years ago, and it was the first time he made me send an airplane into a spin. If you don't know what that is, you bring the nose up until the thing stalls, and you hit the left rudder and the right aileron, and it just starts spinning like crazy, and hopefully have enough air before you hit the ground. And we did. But it was that experience of terror and ecstasy. You know what I mean? You got it? Emily's idea was something different. She talked about our wedding, just before our wedding service. She was back at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Minneapolis, down this long aisle, and there she was back there, and she said she was so terrified she was ready to toss her cookies. That was her experience. Well, and of course, you know, her life has just been nothing but ecstasy ever since. Well, the experience the women at the tomb had that day was something like this, but only probably to the thousandth power, right? If you're a mathematician, overwhelming terror and ecstasy they felt. Such that they had no words to speak. I mean, they were encountering something they'd heard about. Jesus had told them this three times before he was crucified, right? But never in their lives could they imagine what was going to happen as they walked toward that tomb with grief at the loss of their master and their friend, you know. And they walk into the tomb where the stone had been rolled away. And remember what they heard from this guy dressed in white? "Don't be amazed. You're seeking Jesus of Nazareth. He's been raised. He's not here. See where they laid him? Now, go tell his disciples." And of course, they were dumbstruck. Terror and ecstasy all at one time, and they couldn't even talk. Well, you know what they had just experienced? They had experienced the very first time for all humanity. It was not just a one-time stage event or something that you could puzzle over and say, "Oh, that happened or didn't happen." This was the beginning of a lifetime reality, a human life principle that now rules the universe, that has broken into life in the death and resurrection of Jesus. That now, you know, people will ask, "Well, where is God?" And you might say, "Well, God's up in the heavens, right? Or God's in church or something, you know." No, in the death and resurrection of Christ, in this radical terror and ecstasy-filled moment, God is invading all time and space. Remember in the Gospel of Mark as well, when Jesus dies, what happens? Remember the temple curtain is ripped in two? And what does that mean? It means God's power is unleashed on the earth. There's no barriers to God's love, power, grace, mercy, and peace anymore. God is in charge of the world, and it's breaking loose even as we speak. That's what it means. There's no longer any separation between God and life. In this event, there's a gulf between death and life. The bridge is Jesus Christ and his death and resurrection. God invading all space and time. Think about this. So there's nowhere that God cannot be, bringing life out of death. And whenever you experience life coming out of death, you are experiencing the resurrection principle of life that was initiated in Jesus. So I'm not sure about you. You think, well, maybe when have I experienced that sort of thing, you know? Well, we've been talking about covenants, by the way, through this whole season of Lent here at Lord of Life. God's covenants with God's people from Abraham and Sarah all the way through the Old Testament. And every covenant was God's initiative. Even when people screwed up, he still made a new promise to them. Now, until this final covenant is established in the death and rising of Jesus. And it has nothing to do with our power. It has nothing to do with our believing it hard enough. It has nothing to do with our acceptance of it. We can ignore this, but it's still true. The operating principle of the universe is resurrection. That's it. God acting for us once and for all, overcoming, as Martin Luther said, sin, death, and the power of the devil, all overcome this morning. Well, if that's true, then it has to be an everyday experience if it's going to mean anything to us, right? Otherwise, it's just something where you, wasn't it nice, let's go to Easter service and have brunch. Not nice. No, this is a life-changing reality we're getting at here in this event we're celebrating today. Maybe you don't recognize it, but every one of us has had these resurrection experiences or we wouldn't be here. Because it's the prevailing principle of the universe, remember. Now, here we go. Let me tell you about one of the first resurrection stories in our married life. Now, I wasn't ready to toss my cookies at our wedding. I was down here at the altar, and I was in the ecstasy thing, right? I mean, here's this beautiful woman. She's coming down the aisle. I go, wow, what a beautiful, beautiful, awesome woman, and I get to be married to her the rest of my life. How cool is this? You know, she's smart, she's witty, she's intelligent, she's creative, and she's gorgeous. Wow. So that's how I felt until the next day. Our wedding was at Our Savior's in Minneapolis, Minnesota, up in the snow in March. And so we took an airplane down to New Orleans for this ideal honeymoon trip, right? Where it was warm and sunny and cool and all that. And so we were down on Bourbon Street the Sunday night after our wedding. And we were going around having an okay time, you know. And all of a sudden, I had this weird feeling in the pit of my stomach. Like empty, and I wasn't. It wasn't empty because we've been eating and drinking. I mean, I just had this feeling that just kept getting deeper, and all of a sudden thoughts started coming to me. I said, "Oh my gosh, I did this. What did I get myself into? I just got married to this woman for life, and I don't. Here I am standing next to where we were at the streetcar stop, you know, waiting to go back to the Garden District, and the trolley had just we missed it, and we had to wait a half hour. Here I'm standing there going." I don't even know this woman. What did I get myself into? I made a mistake. This is wrong. You know, but I had to keep my mouth shut, of course. And then Emily, she says, you know how it is, those of you who have marriages. So she said to me, Gary, what's wrong? And I said, nothing. Right. Isn't that what you say? Well, yeah, you're right. One great big nothing. It was, at any rate. We stood there, and finally, thank God, the streetcar came. We took our ride back to the Garden District where we were staying, got into bed in silence. I was staring into the dark ceiling, you know, and terrorized. I was just full of terror. It really was. And all of a sudden, Emily in the dark turns to me, and she says, Gary, I have to tell you something. This is, I don't know how to tell you this, but I made a mistake. And I married you. I didn't even know who you were, and I married you. I made a mistake. and I don't know what I've gotten myself into. And I said, I feel the same way. And then we started realizing, maybe this is how a true married life starts, you know, with terror and ecstasy, and you'd have no idea what's coming ahead of you. It's just totally open and mysterious, all to be created, and you have no idea what you've gotten yourself into. Wow. So we talked a little bit, you know, and we started then realizing, you know, talking about what got us into this marriage in the first place, and how we were good for each other, and there's a lot of ways we're good for each other still. And then we got into our hopes and dreams, many of which have been fulfilled beyond our wildest dreams, you know, now. And all this icy distance just melted in this pure, unadulterated ecstasy for 3 days. You know how life goes, right? And so that was an experience of resurrection. You understand that? This is real life, practical resurrection power of Jesus Christ. This is what's going on when we're truly understanding and grasping what life is about with this life principle of resurrection. It's a resurrection bringing life where it only looked like death, where our marriage could have ended right then and there. And for some people, maybe it does. And that has been the pattern in our whole married life. From death to life, from death to life, from death to life, from death to life, that experience. And yes, we haven't been perfect. We've screwed up a lot in this marriage, me especially. And some marriages don't make it, and that's just such a struggle, and we do the best we can, all of us, right? But we've been through this by the grace of God through life's ups and downs, and yes, even, you know, as most of you know, we're a recovering alcoholic family, and that even has brought some resurrection power like you wouldn't believe into our marriage. But over these 43 years, the same death and life pattern has repeated itself hundreds of times. In fact, you know, there's still times when I look at her and I'm amazed. I ask, who is this woman I married? Last night she was singing at the Easter Vigil, "My Lord, What a Morning," and she belted that song and I went, who did I marry? You understand this? Resurrection is a life principle. It's not something that's just a cute idea. It's a life principle now for all of us. It's at the heart of life. And there's nowhere that God's power cannot be in all of time and space as a result of this resurrection of Christ. It's growing, it's expanding, it's moving all the time, all the way to the conclusion of life itself. Whenever that happens, God's power is at work, even when it doesn't look like it. Even when it doesn't feel like it, God's power is moving everything toward the final conclusion in this resurrection power. And that means what? Just like for those first disciples in the Gospel of Mark, there's nothing so unfaithful we can think or say or do. No denial, no betrayal, no loss of nerve in our lives that God cannot overcome. Because God has acted once and for all in this covenant, and we are simply in the cleanup phase of history. And it's all going to be brought to conclusion when everything is restored to the way it's meant to be. So, they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and ecstasy had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Huh? I understand how they felt, don't you? That's what resurrection is like. But they didn't stay that way, did they? And neither do we. Because as we take in this resurrection power day after day, week after week, year after year in our lives, more and more of what this means come to us. You seek Jesus of Nazareth in the dead places, he isn't there. He's risen. And in fact, he is going ahead of you into every life experience you can ever imagine, every conceivable situation in life you have to encounter. He's already gone ahead of you, and he's there waiting for you. because he's just as faithful to you as he's been to Emily and I. Not because of our goodness, not because of your goodness, not because of how nice or faithful we are, but because God is faithful. And God does what God says God will do. So let's get our courage up. Let's do it a couple, three more times. I say Christ is risen. You say he's risen indeed. Christ is risen. Christ is risen. Christ is risen. That's the way life is now.